Many of the women wouldn't cook for the men that evening, much less speak to them. They were pissed that the men hadn't helped them during the crossing. But other women held no hard feelings, so the men got fed eventually. Eudora smiled across the fire at Preacher as he ladled out stew into his pan.
You didn't win any popularity contests today, Captain.
I didn't plan on winning no prizes. What I plan on doing is getting you ladies through to the coast. We ain't hit nothing yet, Eudora. It's been a cakewalk so far. But these gals will be a hell of a lot tougher when we get there than when we left. Bet on that.
I have no doubts about that, Captain. None whatsoever.
She tossed Preacher a huge chunk of bread.
Just baked. Enjoy.
The following days passed uneventfully. By the time the women had crossed the Soldier and then the Vermilion, they knew how to cross rivers, at least small ones, and asked no help from the men. It became a matter of pride to the ladies, and that was what Preacher had been hoping they'd develop. And despite himself, he began to feel proud of these women, too. They wasn't no shrinking violets. They were women wanting a new start in a new land, and they were willing to work for it. They were about 3 days south of the Little Blue when the steel pony came galloping back to the train of the Preacher.
Indians! Sauk, Fox, and some Winnebagoes, Preacher. They've come down from the north for their annual spring hunt on the plains.
Are they friendly?
Well, they were not unfriendly. But we have to remember that this is their great religious time, too.
Yeah, Manitou. Manitou can make them unpredictable as a tornado.
What is Manitou?
For many people of the tribes, Manitou is the sum of the forces that are present in all things. Men, rocks, trees, the wind, everything. Manitou is the controlling hand in their destinies. If some feel the power of Manitou within them, well, they may attack.
Pass the word, Steel's Pony. Tell the gals to haul out them rifles and shotguns. Make sure that hair is dangling. We're gonna circle for the afternoon and put on a show of force for them.
Preacher rode up to the lead wagon.
Indians, Captain?
Yep, and a bunch of them, too. Begin the circle, Eudora.
Aye, aye, Captain. If they want a fight, we'll give them one.
Preacher sent scouts out to keep an eye on the engines while he sat his saddle and watched the wagon slowly circle the driven livestock. He'd had the women practice this move, and they did it perfectly without panic. He rode up to the wagon with Faith, Gale, and Wallace.
Don't worry too much about this bunch. They're not going to risk getting killed and leaving their families without no means of food. If they do come close to us, Miss Faith, what you're going to see is all that's left of the Great Lakes tribes. And I mean, this is it. They really ain't been a force to reckon with since Black Hawk and his Sauks and Foxes was cut down back in 32 as they tried to swim the Mississippi.
Then why are we doing this?
Because you don't never know about an Indian. They don't think like we do. Their values ain't the same. I'm not saying they're right or wrong, they're just different. I expect once they see how big a force we are, they'll ride on, but they might come back tonight and try to steal horses or oxen or maybe take a scalp or two. You just never really know.
Faith looked at Preacher thoughtfully for a second, like she really hadn't seen him before. Then she ducked her head and began scribbling down words furiously on her tablet.
Y'all fetch your weapons and get behind cover. I'm going out to confer with them.
Preacher rode back over to where Ring and Steel's Pony were keeping an eye on the situation.
Pretty sour looking bunch, Preacher.
Preacher looked at the gathering of engines about a quarter of a mile away. As he watched them, he knew this bunch wouldn't give him any trouble. Even at this distance, he could tell that many of the men were old by the way they sat their ponies.
Get all the men here, Ring. Rifles in hand, line them up along this ridge. I think that'll be all we'll have to do. Oh, and put that damn Rupert Worthington right here next to me. I don't want him starting nothing.
The 25 men, all carrying rifles, lined up in a single line on the ridge, each man about 5 feet from the next.
Are they hostile? Will there be a fight?
No, boy. They ain't hostile. They're just old and tired and beat down in spirit and wore out, that's all. And I ain't gonna take what pride they have left away from them. You stay here. Steel's Pony, Ring, let's ride.
The three mountain men walked their horses up to the mixed band of engines. Preacher lifted one hand, palm out, to a man who wore the headdress of a chief. The chief hesitated, then returned the gesture of friendship, peace, and welcome.
I'm called White Wolf, also Preacher. We apologize if we have interrupted your hunt. We're only passing through. We'll be gone in the morning.
That is good. Will that be so with all white men?
All white men are not the same. Like all Injuns are not the same. They are good and bad among us all.
You speak the truth. It is good to hear it from the lips of a white man. It is a rare thing. I am Chikuskuk, chief of the Fox. I say that you will not be bothered by us. Come and go in peace.
Preacher walked around as the women finished circling the wagon and began loading the gun.
Keep the youngins at the center of the circle. There'll be a few stalker fox who'll try to slip inside tonight to take some scalps. By now, they've broken away from the main band and are circling the train, but they're miles out.
But you said the chief promised us safe passage.
The chief don't always speak for everybody. Young people is the same everywhere. Some of them have respect for their elders, and some don't. You can bet your ass there'll be a dozen or so pay us a visit tonight.
Eudora had done a bang-up job of circling the wagons. She'd pulled them in tight, angling them close with tongues pointed inward so the mules and oxen could be unhitched inside the protective circle. Steele's pony slipped into the camp and snuck up behind one of the drivers. He tapped him on the shoulder.
You will die unless you open your ears to the night. You stand and shuffle around instead of squatting and being silent. Also, you smell bad. Shape up.
Steele's pony walked on till he found Preacher standing with Lieutenant Worthington. The soldier's eyes were open so wide he looked like a panicky owl.
They come.
How many?
10, maybe 12.
Well, what do you want me to do, Preacher?
Get back to your post and stay there. And don't be firing at shadows. You'll have a whole damn camp shooting at the wind.
Later, the first young buck into the camp made the fatal mistake of going after Eudora Hempstead. Dora flipped the engine off her back and smashed the butt of her rifle into his face. Then she ruined his throat with another savage butt smash.
Ooh, very good. You want his scalp?
Heavens no!
Faith, standing nearby, turned green and Snake knelt down with his knife in his hand.
And then I'll just jerk it off.
Snake hung the scalp on his belt. Eudora removed the blood from her rifle by rubbing the butt plate on the ground. Then she cradled her rifle as she turned her attention to the blackness outside of the circle. Preacher's eyes picked up a flitting shadow and he cocked his hawking. There was no moon. The skies were overcast and the air was heavy with moisture. They'd have rain in a few hours. The shadow flitted again and Preacher lifted his rifle. If the engine held to his course, he was heading for a tangle of old brush about 50 yards from the train.
Good shooting, Captain!
Eudora lifted her rifle and blasted the knife.
Where the hell did you shoot that buck, Eudora?
In the stern, dead center!
He'll not be sitting on no horse for some time to come. She's firing a Whitney Military 69 rifle, their new model. Oh, it's a dandy, too. That buck probably ain't got but one back cheek left. Oh, if you ladies will pardon my unseemly talk.
There was no doubt in Preacher's mind that Eudora's shot was deliberately placed. Everyone waited for a long and silent 10 minutes. Steele's pony lay on his belly, ear to the ground.
They go. They will not return.
Their medicine turned sour on them. That shooting by Miss Eudora done it. You'll do, lady. You'll do just fine.
Preacher was quietly amazed at how many of the women were holding up so well. He'd seen grown men unable to cope with the trials of the West. Of course, some were adjusting faster than others. Faith had been horrified to discover that there was really no road, just a trail of sorts. But the Eastern socialite, sometimes writer, had toughened up despite herself. Her face and forearms had turned red from the sun, blistered, and then begun the tanning process. Her muscles, which had ached fiercely the first week, had grown stronger from pushing, shoving, hauling, hours at the reins handling the big mules. So far, none of the women had said one word about going back. The mountain men had been surprised at that, for They had been watching about a dozen of the ladies who they felt were the weak ones, not necessarily in body, but in spirit. But even those women had toughened up and were enduring the trail. They saw no signs of the Sauk or Fox as they rolled out the next morning, heading for the Platte. Preacher knew they had killed at least three of the attacking Injuns and wounded at least two more. To an Injun's mind, those losses were too great to continue the battle. They had failed, but perhaps there would be another day. Steele's pony had been gone for 2 days. Something had been troubling the Delaware, and he had pulled out, heading for the back trail. On the afternoon of the third day of his absence, he rode into the camp and swung down from the saddle. The wagons had completed their circle, cook fires were blazing, and the coffee was ready when Steele's pony rode in. Ring took one look at the Delaware's worried face and handed him a cup of strong, hot coffee.
What's wrong?
A large band of white men are following us. They carry supplies for a long journey and are well armed. They are being careful to stay 2 days' ride behind us. We are in trouble.
Did you recognize any of the men?
Jack Hayes, Tom Gushing, and Ratface. I could not recognize any of the others, but a tall, well-dressed man appears to be in command.
Preacher glanced over at the silent Lieutenant Worthington, who sat staring into the fire, frowning at the news. For the last several days, Rupert and his small troop had been very quiet and reflective. Preacher and the other mountain men knew what had happened. They'd seen it many times over the years. The vastness of the land had numbed Worthington and his men. This was what Preacher had tried to explain back in Missouri. But the plains, well, they couldn't be described. It was simply impossible to do that. They had to be seen and tasted personally. And for most, it was a very humbling experience. Their next humbling experience would be when they hit the Rockies. Worthington felt Preacher's eyes on him and looked up, troubled.
Is it possible, Preacher, that these men are heading west on legitimate business?
I wouldn't think so, Rupert. I got me a hunch, because I run into this very same thing last year. Jack and Ratface were supposed to be the inside men. Once we got several weeks away from the jump-off point, the mothers in the gang would ambush and take over the train. Hell, folks have been doing this ever since men and women left the colonies and headed west. It ain't nothing new.
But this is, well, dastardly. Well, we'll just alert the authorities and let
them... Ain't no authorities out here, Rupert. Nearest law is days to the east and almost 2,000 miles to the west. There ain't no law except in the pistols buckled around your waist and the rifle in your saddle boot. And we'll find us a good ambush spot up ahead, and you and your men will take the wagons on. Me and my friends will take care of Jack Hayes and his bunch of no-counts.
Ambush spot?
Yeah.
You'll lay in wait and ambush those men coming up behind us?
Yeah. You got a better idea?
But you can't do that.
Why not?
Because those men haven't done anything, that's why.
But they're gonna do something.
You don't know that for sure.
Look, I know Jack Hayes. He's a murdering, stealing, raping son of a bitch, and he has been all his miserable life. Anyone who rides with him is just as bad.
No, sir. I have studied the law at a very fine university. What you are proposing just won't do. There is such a thing as due process. Every accused person is entitled, under the Constitution, to a fair trial. You can't just kill somebody because you think they might be planning some evil deed.
The mountain men all exchanged glances. Blackjack looked back at Worthington, puzzled.
Why not? We've all done it afore.
Lieutenant Worthington paled. Quietly, he stood and walked into the darkness between the cook fires. Blackjack started the stand to fetch him back, but the Preacher shook his head and the mountain man sat back down.
He'll be all right. He's heading towards Eudora's fire.
That night, Rupert Worthington had supper with Eudora Hempstead, Cornelia, and Anne. He confessed to them his worry about Preacher and what he might do.
I can't leave the train. None of my men can. We are under strict orders to stay with the train at all costs, even if it means my lives and the lives of my men. Otherwise, I'd send a runner back to alert the army at Fort Leavenworth. I am certainly impaled upon the horns of a dilemma.
I agree with Preacher. Ambush the murdering scum!
Miss Hempstead! I cannot believe you said that.
Why not? I come from seafaring stock, Lieutenant. For over 150 years, my people have answered the siren song of the sea. Ships' captains all, and they worked their way before the mast, from cabin boy to master. Do you know much about the sea, Lieutenant?
No.
Ships signal with flags. They talk with flags. They have flags for every conceivable occasion and threat. Ships that sail under no flag do so at considerable risk to themselves. Many a ship has been blown out of the water for refusing to show their colors, or to strike them.
This is not the sea, Miss Hempstead.
Same as. It's a vast, ever-changing, constantly windswept, landlocked sea. Those men behind us are deliberately staying behind us, out of sight, like pirates, until they make their move to shoot and board. We can't let them get ahead of us, Rupert. Preacher can't take that chance. They'll ambush us at their leisure.
What Preacher is suggesting is murder, Miss Hempstead.
Is it now? If you know a man has a knife and has a history of slitting throats, and he's walking up behind you in the dark, are you going to wait till the blade's in your gizzard before you defend yourself?
Then it's just as Preacher said. There is no law out here.
Except for survival.
It comes down to whose life is more important. Theirs or ours?
I suppose it does.
You should have studied for the law, Miss Hempstead. It might have altered your views.
Women aren't allowed to do that, Lieutenant. Yet.
Across the wide inner circle formed by the wagons, the mountain men sat, drinking coffee.
I forgot how strange the laws is back in the States. Plum goofy, I say.
I sure hope that way of thinking never gets past Missouri.
Snake stretched out on his blankets with his hands behind his head.
We've been out here too long, boys. We should have gone back from time to time to polish our manners, I reckon. Most of our kind did, you know.
Yeah, most of our kind will be gone in a few more years. Quite a few has done hung up their buckskins and donned fancy pants and is making their way pretty good in California, rubbing elbows with the genteel and living in houses and working in stores and the like. No thank you.
What are we going to do about all that trash that's following us, Preacher?
I don't know. The way Rupert reacted to my suggestion, I reckon we're just going to have to let him attack us before we do anything.
That's foolish.
Yeah, so was hauling 150 women across the damn wilderness. I reckon we all done won the grand prize for foolishness already. So I'm going to apologize now for getting you boys in this mess.
We came along because we wanted to, Preacher. Besides, what else did any of us have planned?
Yeah, I knowed what you was doing back yonder in my camp. I just played along with you. I think we all done earned the right to act foolish if we want to.
Now, I personally think we're doing the right thing. Hell, I helped open up this country. It'll be fun to see it all again. Because I ain't never going to get another chance.
All this talk ain't giving us no answers about what to do with them following us. And I sure don't like the idea of waiting for them to attack us. That purely cuts against the grain as far as I'm concerned.
Well, boys, I think I'm in sort of a jam. In one way, I'm in charge of this fool's parade, but on the other hand, the army's in charge.
Now we are in trouble.
How old was you when you first come out to the wilderness, Blackjack?
Oh, hell, you do have a point. Lot younger than Rupert, that's for sure. Surely he ain't as dumb as he sounds. You know, it sure seemed back then like we knew a lot more about living than he appears to.
We did. These young folks nowadays, I don't know about them. Seems like they ain't got no respect for their elders. You can't tell them a damn thing. They know it all. Country's going to hell in a handbasket.
You mighty right about that.
I come out just before you did, Preacher. Wasn't it grand?
Oh, it was for a fact.
Well, that got the men spinning tall tales far into the night. Hell, it was at least 8 p.m. before they wound down and hit the blankets. Preacher heard the first drops of rain begin falling about midnight. And he pulled his robe over him more snugly. The last thing Preacher needed the next morning was Faith Crump standing there in the downpour, her hands on her shapely hips, staring him down.
What do you mean, walk? Have you taken leave of your senses?
Probably. I'm here, ain't I? But you're still gonna walk.
Why?
Because I ain't gonna put no more strain on them mules and oxen than needs to be, that's why. Look at them ruts yonder, Missy. They're deep. And they're going to be a lot deeper before the day's done. Ground's already soaked. Look at them clouds behind us. This is one of them storms that's coming out of the east, and they're always bad. We're gonna have rain for about 3 days.
Who says so?
Steele's pony, that's who.
That's ridiculous. Nobody can predict the weather with any degree of accuracy.
Delaware can.
Poppycock and balderdash.
Faye stamped her little booted foot and it sank about ankle deep.
It's raining, ain't it? You can't deny that, just like he said it would.
We will all catch pneumonia and perish out here.
Oh, it's unnatural warm for this time of year. You'll just get wet is all. You'll dry out. Get a bar of soap and take a bath. I'll hold the candle so nobody can see you.
Oh, you!
Faye flounced off the best she could with her boots sinking ankle deep in mud.
Ooh, she sure is cute when she's all flustered up. Hey, pass the word, Faye. Everybody who's driving oxen will walk, and only the driver will stay on the box behind the mule. The rest of you, walk!
In a downpour that reduced visibility to only a few hundred feet, the wagons rolled out, with the women slogging along beside. Long before the nooning period, most of the women had removed their slickers and tossed them into the wagon. It was just too hot. Preacher, as did the other mountain men, had him a hunch this unnaturally warm weather was only a fluke. It was not yet mid-April. The weather could and probably would abruptly shift and turn very cold. Here on the plains, this warm rain could just as easily have been sleet slash down. About an hour before the noon, Preacher made up his mind.
Yeah!
He and Hammer fought to get close enough to Steele's pony so the Preacher could lean over and yell over the wind and rain into the Delaware's ear.
Find us a place to hold up! There ain't no point in going through all this crap. There'll be a bad accident if we keep on like this.
I've already found one, Preacher. Just up ahead, maybe a half an hour. No more than that.
Lead us to it.
The place Steele's pony found was a thin stand of trees. The women circled the wagons and climbed under the canvas to change into dry clothing. Preacher rode around the wagon several times, seemingly oblivious to the raging elements. Something was wrong, but he couldn't put a finger on it. On his third pass, Eudora flagged him down.
What's wrong, Captain?
I don't know. Something is. Get a head count, Eudora. I got a bad feeling.
Soon, Eudora returned to where the men had strung up a sheet of canvas and were crouched under it.
One wagon's missing. Nora Sims, Betty Rutherford, and Phyllis Reed. But they were in the center of the column. How could they just disappear?
Easy in this weather. I'll wager it was doing that real bad spell and couldn't none of us see nothing.
Eudora?
Eudora and the men all turned to face April Johnson, a slim and attractive young woman from Georgia.
I overheard Nora and her group talking the other night. I thought they were only funning. They were talking about turning back. Then they saw me and all of them laughed. I should have reported it. I'm sorry.
It isn't your fault.
Putting an arm around the younger woman's shoulders, Eudora looked at Preacher and jerked his head toward the wagons. She led the young woman away.
We wasn't a mile out when this bad storm hit. I think it'll become 5 miles. So if they kept on and didn't stop, they're a good 8 or 10 miles back now. Well, let's saddle us some fresh mounts. The best in the herd. Snake, you and Charlie stay with the women. Come on, let's go, boys. We gotta find them women before engines or that trash is following us does.
The men turned to move when Lieutenant Worthington hurried over, rain pouring down his face.
Is it true about the women?
Yeah, it's true. Stay with the wagons and be sure to put extra guards on tonight. Goddamn Pawnee would love to strike in this kind of weather. And in this part of the country, they're liable to be right over the next rise.
You can count on me.
You're gonna have to be riding with Lady Luck beside us, Preacher. You know we've had engines all around us for several days.
Yep, Ned. You got that right. Keep your powder dry, boys. Let's go.
Men saddled up the horses. Preacher swung into the saddle of a tough-looking, long-limbed roan. Women stood silently and watched the five men ride out through the drenching rain, heading east. About a mile from the wagon train, men split up left and right, staying about 100 yards apart, a better spot where the errant wagon left the train. None of the men expected to see the women again. At least not alive. After a few miles, the men reined up in a ragged group of trees to rest their horses and talk.
We're getting close now. hair on the back of my neck is standing up.
They're all around us. Pawnee, I sense them. And I think they're bear men.
Damn! That'd be our luck.
The Bear Society was a very elite one among the Omaha and the Pawnee, and they were feared by all. They were fierce fighters. Like bears, they were unpredictable and dangerous.
If they took the women, we'll never get them back.
No, we sure won't. We'll be lucky to stay alive. Pawnee hate me worse than they do the Assiniboines, and that includes anybody who rides with me. God damn Pawnee. Well, shit, this ain't doing nothing but getting us wet. Let's ride.
Men carried their pistols under their buckskin shirts and covered holsters on their saddles. Rifles were carried in hardened skin cases that could be discarded in a second. Long-bladed knives and war axes readily at hand. Steele's pony waved to signal the others. He had found where the women's wagon had left the train. The men gathered around and looked. The rutted tracks were still clear, even in this downpour.
Heading straight back, following the trail. Foolish, foolish ladies.
A few hundred yards later, fears of the men were silently confirmed. Tracks left by a dozen unshod ponies were clearly visible. The Pawnee were closing on the wagon very quickly. Blackjack stared at the churned up earth.
How many you make it, Steele's pony?
At least 12. Maybe as many as 15.
The mountain men rode for another hour, following the wagon tracks. Rain began to abate, finally dwindled down to no more than a drizzle. Preacher stood up in his stirrups and pointed.
There it is.
Ned took a spyglass from his saddlebags and opened it full. He peered through the lenses for a moment, then silently handed the spyglass to Preacher. The hard look in his eyes told the entire story. Blackjack, Steele's pony, and Ring had turned their horses to cover the other directions. Preacher's face hardened as he viewed the scene. Two of the three women were clearly visible through the magnification. They were naked, of course, and they were dead. Both had been scalped. The Injuns had taken the mules, although many Injuns disliked the fractious animals. Preacher handed the spyglass to Ned without a word. The men cautiously walked their horses up to the savage scene. Nora Sims had been the youngest and prettiest of the three women. She was gone. They had taken her. Betty Rutherford had been used badly, the back of her head bashed in by a stone war axe. She had then been scalped. Phyllis Reed probably had broken free sometime during the struggle and tried to run away. She had only gotten a few yards before an arrow in her back brought her down. She lay face down and naked on the wet prairie grass, her inner thighs bruised. Steele's pony dismounted, covered the lower part of Phyllis's body with a discarded blanket, then broke off the arrow and looked at it. He threw it on the ground in disgust.
Goddamn Pawnee!
Look southwest, boys. There's tracks of two sets of mules, dragging their harness.
Stay where you are. I will look to see if it is a trap while you bury the women. It is safe. Do you want the mules, Preacher?
Yeah. We'll take the wagon back and tear it down for spare parts. You watch your butt out yonder, Steele's pony. It ain't like them goddamn Pawnee to go off very far. They know somebody will come looking.
The Preacher rummaged around in the clothing-strewn bed and found a couple of shovels. It was easy digging in the soaked earth. The men worked swiftly, digging down as far as they dared, constantly looking over their shoulders. The women were wrapped in blankets and buried. Then the men went looking for stones to cover the mounds and to keep animals from digging up the bodies and eating them. Preacher, Blackjack, Ring, and Ned stood next to the two small, fresh mounds of earth on the vastness of an untamed land.
God rest these poor women.
Amen. Let's get the hell out of here.
Steele's pony had found all four mules and brought them back to the wagon.
The Pawnee are gone. They left in a big hurry for some reason. One horse is carrying double, so they took Nora with them for sure.
She'll soon wish she'd died with these others.
For a fact.
The men stood around the graves and looked at one another for a few seconds.
Well, hell.
Now what do we do?
What say you boys? Do we go after her?
By Lord, I couldn't live with myself if we didn't at least try to fetch her back. I think we gotta at least try.
I'm with Ring. I say we go after her.
Count me in.
All right. Let's do it. We'll brush corral the mules over yonder by that thicket and come back for them. If we don't, well, they'll bust out of it when they get hungry. Somebody take that shovel over yonder with them. If Nora kicks up too much of a fuss, they'll just knock her in the head and dump her. Personally, I hope they do. We all seen what a war party can do to a woman.
The mountain men found Nora Sims less than 3 miles from the new twin graves on the prairie. The Injuns had bashed her head in, scalped her, and dumped her. She was a pitiful sight, lying naked and bloody on the ground. Ring had brought along a blanket, and he wrapped her up. And all together, the men took the body back to where they had buried the others and laid Nora to rest beside Betty and Phyllis. The initial storm had blown itself out, and for a brief moment, the sun broke through. But already, dark storm clouds were beginning to gather, and the men knew they were in for a couple more days of terrible weather, just like Steele's pony had predicted. The mules were hitched up, and Ned tied the reins of his horse to the rear of the wagon and took the seat. The men started back to the wagon train.
Being trailed, boys.
Yeah, Pawnee Bearmen. But they are holding back. I think they have bigger plans and don't want to waste them on us.
Wagon train?
Probably, but they're fools if they attack. We can hold off one hell of a war party. But did y'all notice the torture marks on the Rutherford woman? She might have broken. Told them about the wagon train being mostly women. That might have got them all excited. And maybe why they bashed in Nora's head and dumped her.
Never thought of that. But you might be right. If that's the case, they've sent for more bucks.
That'd be my guess.
We're in for a long night.
It was dark when the men arrived back at the wagon train. Preacher gathered the women around and leveled with them about the fate of Nora, Betty, and Phyllis. His words were brutally hard, deliberately so, because he wanted the women to know every detail. It just might save their lives in the future, so he spared them nothing. Then he told them about the Pawnee war party trailing them.
We got a good defensive spot here. And put everything you ever heard or read about Injuns never attacking at night out of your heads. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. It all depends on how strong they believe their medicine is at the time. Now, let's get supper cooked and eat, and then everybody in place. I think we're gonna have us a wet and wild night.
Pale and nervous, the women moved off to prepare. Preacher walked away to check with the men on guard, but Faith caught up with him while everyone else was out of earshot.
I have noticed, Mr. Preacher, that your quaint manner of speaking sometimes vanishes, and you do seem to be able to speak proper English. Why is that?
I ain't got no idea, Missy.
There you go again. Do you wish people to believe that you are nothing but an ignorant buffoon?
Well, I don't give a damn what people believe me to be, Missy. What other folks think ain't no concern of mine. It's what they do that I paid heed to.
What are you running from, Mr. Preacher?
Huh?
It's obvious to me that you're hiding out here in this desolate place because of something terrible that occurred in your past.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, it is. Did some lady break your heart years back and you had to run away to ease the pain of love lost?
What are you talking about, Missy?
Snake had slipped up and was standing a few feet away behind Faith. He was listening and struggling to contain his laughter. Suddenly, Faith stepped closer to Preacher, and he could feel the warmth from her body chasing away the slight chill from the rain.
You can tell me, Preacher. I want to be your friend. I really, really do. Yes.
She stepped closer still. Another 2 inches, and she'd be crawling inside his buckskins. Preacher resisted an urge to grab her and run off under a wagon with her. Faith was ripe in all the right spots, and even with a dark floppy hat covering her cut-off strawberry curls, she was lovely to look at and quite desirable. However, with anywhere from 20 to 200 Pawnee or more prowling around the encirclement, Preacher concluded that this was probably a poor time to be thinking about romance. Steele's pony appeared out of the darkness, unknowingly saving Preacher from what was fast becoming a very awkward moment.
They come, Preacher.
Get back to your wagon, Faith. This night's about to blow up in our faces.
Be careful.
Preacher nodded to her, turned, and was gone, Snake and Steele's pony right behind him.
Steele's pony, how many?
Too many. We're not that far from the Platte. They must have just broken their winter camp there. This would be quite a prize for them.
I can smell war paint. My God, there must be hundreds of them.
Several hundred at least. I think they know about the women.
As big as a bear on hind legs, Blackjack came striding over with his rifle in his hand.
I got the women under the wagons and behind boxes and the like. They're scared, but game.
I don't understand this. Something's got them all stirred up and we ain't it. We're just bearing the brunt of whatever it is.
You reckon Jack Hayes and that trash with him somehow is mixed up in all this?
It wouldn't surprise me none. Just can't figure out what it might be.
Preacher turned his face skyward as he noticed that the rain had stopped for the moment.
He'll be hitting us right about now. Get in place.
The first wave of the war party came at him in a surge of painted up fury.
Now!
Whatever the Pawnee expected, it certainly wasn't this. The only white women they had ever encountered were all cowering, trembling types. That's what they believed they would encounter on this train. They were wrong. The heavy balls from the rifles tore their flesh and bloodied the ground. The Pawnee lost nearly 50 men in the first few seconds. And that was quite enough for this night, thank you. Those women whose jobs it was to reload the rifles and pistols worked fast. And within seconds, the women behind the rifles were ready for another charge. But it didn't materialize. The night grew steadily quieter as the Pawnee pulled back, well out of range. Some of their dead were too close to the wagons for them to recover. The mountain men were quick to take advantage of that. Most of the women and many of the Missouri men looked on horrified as Preacher and his friends pulled out knives and began mutilating the bodies. Faith, shocked, struggled to find her voice.
Stop that!
Oh, shut up. We ain't liking this no more than you all, but it's gotta be done.
Why, for God's sake?
Cut the eyes out so they can't see their way to the great beyond. You cut their hands off so they can't fight any enemies they might come upon. Now they'll be lost forever in the darkness, to wander forever.
That's the most unchristian thing I have ever witnessed.
Ring frowned over his shoulder at Faith, his long-bladed knife flashing bloodily in the light from the campfires.
Well, you should have seen Nora Sims, Betty Rutherford, and Phyllis Reed, then mayhap you wouldn't be so aghast at this.
Next to Ring, Steele's pony held up two severed hands and threw back his head, face to the cloud-shrouded sky.
Attack us again, pony! This will be your fate, to forever wander the outer darkness and never find your way!
Every other person get some rest for a few hours, then take your partner's place. Come on, work it out, ladies. It's gonna be a long night.
I thought you said they wouldn't return.
I said they probably wouldn't be back.
Are you going to leave those disgusting bodies right there?
No, Missy, we're going to pick them up and tote the goddamn things over to where the Pawnee have made camp, and we're going to place them there for them real nice-like.
Well, you don't have to be sarcastic about it.
Miss Crump, shut the hell up.
Preacher walked off.
I will not shut up. Just because you've got a bit of gristle dangling between your legs doesn't make you God. Cut up bodies all night if you want to. I'm going to get through this journey, and no one, least of all you, is going to keep me from speaking my mind about it. Good night, damn you!
Faith stalked off toward her wagon while Blackjack looked after her in awe.
That woman sure can string words together, can't you, Ring?
If Preacher don't give her what she's craving pretty soon, we're in for a long trip.
Poured from the skies the next day, and Preacher told the ladies to rest. And it gave them a chance to shake out their blankets for the umpteenth time after one gal found a rattlesnake in there, scaring the other women half to death with her screams.
Steele's pony, go kill a rattler and bring it back here. That's the only damn thing that's gonna calm these women down. Damn, a bunch of city women anyways.
Hey, I have a better suggestion.
Oh?
Yeah, you go kill a rattlesnake and bring it back here. And good luck finding one in this rain.
And watch out for them Pawnee. The way I see it, most of them hightailed back to camp. But I figure there may be 50 or so who stayed behind with revenge on their minds. And they'd just love to find you riding out there alone.
What a bunch of friends I got. Smart asses, the whole bunch of you.
Preacher made another walk around to the circled wagons. Slopping through the mud and churned up ground, the rain beat down on his hat. Preacher stopped by the wagon where he heard the coughing. His squatting down, he looked at the three women huddled on the ground under the wagon bed.
Get that woman inside the wagon and get her warm. If you got any ginger root, make some tea. She's on the verge of pneumonia. Strip her down to the buff, rub her good, and get that blood to the surface. Pneumonia's a killer out here. Once you get her dry and warm and full of ginger tea, add some clove to it, and she'll go right to sleep. She's got to rest.
Rain continued to pound the pioneers during all that wet and gray day. The only bright spot was that the Pawnee had chosen not to launch another attack. Charlie and Steele's pony rode out about noon and completed a wide circle around the area. The Pawnee were indeed gone. When the men returned, Steele's pony paused when a woman asked him a question, while Charlie crawled under the canvas with the other men to get out of the wet, sip coffee to get warm.
They headed north, then they cut west. I reckon they figured the rain would cover their tracks, and it would have in another hour or so. That bunch of revenge seekers will be hitting us somewheres along the Platte.
I most certainly will not do that.
Suit yourself, lady.
Steele's pony came walking over to the small group of men, shaking his head. Preacher poured the Delaware a cup of hot coffee.
What was that all about?
The woman said her child had gotten into poison ivy and asked me what to do about it. I told her to strip the child and dunk her into a mud puddle. That would help relieve the irritation. She refused.
It works!
Of course it does. But I will find some golden seal when the rain ends, and that works better. Even though I was raised by whites back east, I have always felt that whites are sadly lacking in basic knowledge. It's amazing to me that the white people have progressed as far as they have. Present company not included, of course.
The folks got things too easy back east. I was told about something called a train. Runs on steel tracks. Carries people at fantastic speeds. Ain't no horse in the world can keep up with it. Makes my mind boggle to think about going that fast. What's the point in it?
If it goes that fast, how do they stop the damn thing?
I ain't got no idea. Drag something behind it, I reckon. I don't even know how they make it go. No way. I hope I don't never see one of them things. I might decide to shoot it, if I could figure out where its vital organs is.
Eudora smiled as she and Faith, each holding a side of the canvas over their heads, paused on their walk past.
It runs on steam. Burning wood heats the water, and the water produces steam, which turns the wheels. It's quite the common thing. Someday, the trains will be out here, too.
You actually ride on one?
Oh, yes. It's quite an exhilarating experience.
Faster than a horse?
Oh, my, yes. 10 times faster.
10 times? Why, they'd suck the breath right out of you.
It is a thrilling ride.
Eudora smiled once more, and she and Faith continued on their way.
Preacher, do you believe all that?
Yeah, Charlie, I do. Woman told me about it a couple years ago.
Preacher didn't bring up the story about a man over in France who flew through the air hanging in a basket under a balloon. That would have been just a bit too much for anybody to believe. Preacher wasn't even sure he believed that one. Preacher awakened long before the others and looked up into a brilliant star-filled sky, now free of storm clouds. He lay in his blankets and smiled as he watched the first fingers of dawn slowly extinguish the glitter. The storms were past, and they could move on. Under the hot sun, the plains would dry faster than a man unfamiliar with it would believe. In 2 days, they'd be choking with dust and bitching about the heat. At breakfast, Steele's pony leaned over close to Preacher, but with his eyes on the ladies over by Eudora's fire.
The women are up to something.
What?
Don't know, but I think it has something to do with the dead women.
Charlie Burke and Snake came up, both carrying plates piled high with food. Ring, Blackjack, and Ned strolled up too, their plates filling to overflowing. One thing could be said with absolute certainty about the mountain men. They could all eat enough for 2 or 3 men.
The women is putting together a choir.
Choir? What the hell for?
The women is going to have a tribute to them 3 dead ladies, singing and reading from the Bible.
Preacher chewed on a hunk of bread, ignoring the smile on the big mountain man's face.
Oh, hell. I ain't going to interfere with no Bible thumping and praising the Lord in song. I ain't no heathen. But while that's going on, I'll saddle up and scout ahead for a few miles. You want to come along, Steele's pony?
Actually, I find the sound of feminine voices blending together in song quite moving. I shall stay and perhaps join in song with them.
Steele's pony, I know you got you a hellacious good education. 7th grade, I think I heard. But I wish just once you'd talk like a damn dumb engine.
Grub heap good. Are you satisfied now, Snake?
Oh, smart alecky engines. I'll go with you, Preacher, before them females start singing and preaching and get all emotional and start blubbering all over the place. Well, I don't think I could stand that.
Snake, I've been knowing you ever since come out here, and I've been out here since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. You ain't changed none. How the hell old are you anyway?
I don't rightly know, Preacher. I think I'm somewhere between 70 and 80. I know I was years out here before Lewis and Clark come a-traipsing through. You see, I killed me 2 men in Vermont back in 85.
1785? That's about 17 or 18 years before I was even born.
Yep, I fought with Washington in the Revolution, and a mighty cruel time that was, too. Anyway, I lit a shuck for the far western lands and never looked back. Not one time as I looked back further than St. Louis.
Never heard another word from kith and kin?
Nary a peep. I reckon they're all gone now. I've lived more than I ever figured I would. There ain't no place west of the Mississippi that I ain't seen, neither. Well, you know what I mean. Can no man see it all. But I reckon I've crossed every creek and river there is out here. Preacher, can I ask you a favor?
Well, you know you can.
If you're close by when it comes my time to check out, you bury me high, will you? You wrap me up real good and tight so as the smell won't make you puke and tote me up to the highest peak you can find. Plant me there.
I'll do it, Snake. You figuring on cashing in this trip, are you?
You never know, son. You just never know. But I got a feeling. I do. I'll be honest with you. I'm tired. Almighty tired. It ain't so much that I'm tired in my body as it is I'm tired in my mind. I've rid all the trails there is to ride, seen all the sights, some of them a dozen times over, and I've buried more friends than I care to think about. They're calling to me, Preach. I swear to you they is. I hear them in my sleep. You reckon I'm losing my mind?
No. No. I don't think that at all, Snake. But I do believe a man knows when it comes his time to go. And I'll plant you high, Snake. You got my word on that.
Appreciate it. Takes a load off my mind, it do. Well, enough of that kind of talk. I think we've been riding for about 2 miles or so now. You want to stop?
Hell no. I want to put some distance between us and them females. Blackjack knows the way. I want to see what the Platte looks like.
It's wet.
Oh, thank you very much. I remember that much about it.
Yeah, we gotta cross it just north of here.
I ain't made up my mind yet. What worries me is why Washington wanted us to leave Missouri so soon. Ain't no way they could have predicted this early spring with plenty of graze.
That's why them extra wagons of feed was put on, Preacher, at the last minute.
But why?
So we stand a better chance of covering 2,000 miles before the snows fall, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Oh, Jesus. You got something stuck in your craw?
Yeah, I got plenty stuck in my craw, and all of it worrisome. We got alkali water and engines to worry about. We're gonna lose livestock and lives crossing rivers and run off by engines. Now these women are gonna have to boil water before they drink it to keep from getting sick. We was lucky back yonder that no lightning was with that storm, but we'll face it in the months ahead. We're gonna be humping it to keep this train and fresh meat. We're gonna have to wind lash these wagons down the grades up ahead, and I mean we. Them ladies won't be able to do it alone. And did you notice that these big bastard wagons don't have no brakes? Yeah, well, that's why I raised so much hell back yonder about additional heavy rope.
You're just a barrel of laughs today, ain't you, Preacher?
Oh, shit, Snake, I ain't even got going good yet.
I was afraid of that.
We're gonna face dust storms, wind storms, busted wagon wheels, and lonelies.
We can deal with all of them things except in the last. Over the last 50-odd years, I've seen big, strong men fall under the vastness of it all. I mean, go stark raving mad. You've seen it, too. And let's don't forget them men on our back trail. They sure ain't up to no good.
Again, Preacher nodded. The past night, alone under one of the supply wagons, Preacher had carefully gone over the documents given him by the government man back in Missouri. Preacher was convinced the papers were genuine and that the man from Washington was up to no skullduggery. He didn't believe the government man was in any way mixed up with that band of scallywags who were following him. So what were they up to? He didn't know. Who was that tall, well-dressed man who appeared to be leading the group? He didn't know that either. But Preacher had him a hunch he'd know the answers to his questions pretty damn quick. The going was slow that first day after the torrential rains, and the train made only a few miles. But under the blistering sun, the land dried out quickly, and on the second day after the passage of the storm, the wagons made a good 15 miles. The westward women had said and sung their goodbyes to the three ladies who had become discouraged, and no more was said about them, at least not the preacher. Preacher told Blackjack and the other mountain men to take over for a few days. He was going to lag behind and get him an eyeball full of the men following him. He had him a place all picked out, and he had his good spyglass. Then Preacher decided he'd best tell Lieutenant Worthington of his plan, too.
You're not going to ambush them, are you?
Me? Against 40 or 50 armed men? Hell no.
I had to ask, Preacher. Your exploits at Dare and Do are well known. In case you're not back when we reach the plat, do we cross it when we come to it?
No, stay on the south side of it. But you won't reach it before I return. I'll be back before you know it.
You will be careful.
Careful? Out here, son, body best be careful 25 hours a day.
Preacher left within the hour. He headed for a series of bluffs he checked out a few days past, an upthrusting of rocky-faced cliffs that had torn out of the earth hundreds of thousands of years back. Sandstone. They had a good stand of timber on top, which would offer plenty of cover. From up top, he could see for miles, and there were plenty of spots where water gathered and held. Preacher reached the bluffs about an hour before dark and quickly found the trail up to the top. Preacher wiped the tracks clean and scattered handfuls of dirt over his work. It wouldn't fool anyone who knew tracking and was carefully looking, but it would be dark soon, and Preacher would go back over his work come the morning. He picketed Hammer and then spent a full 20 minutes on the bluffs with his spyglass, carefully scanning in all directions. He couldn't see any smoke, no movement other than animals, and he couldn't detect no danger within miles of his location. Now that didn't, of course, mean that there were not engines about, just the Preacher couldn't see them. When you couldn't see an engine, that's when you'd best start worrying and see to your powder and shot. There was no way Preacher was going to risk a fire that night, so he ate a cold supper of bread and meat he'd taken from the wagon train, took him a long drink of cold water that had gathered in the rocks, then rolled up in his blankets and went to sleep. At first light, Preacher was again on the bluffs, carefully hidden in brush with his spyglass. He used the glass north, south, and west, but not east, to keep the rays of the sun from reflecting off the lens. He saw no signs of engines, nor the large party of heavily armed white men he was expecting. When the sun was overhead, he began using the glass toward the east. After an hour had passed, he caught the first sight of the men. When they drew nearer, he began his count, and when he had finished, he was really worried. Counted 50 men, all heavily armed, with plenty of pack horses and provisions. The Preacher knew that man out there in front of the loose column, personally.
Victor Bedell.
Victor Bedell had been a very successful merchant and lawyer in St. Louis up until a few years back. He had dealt in furs and in gold and precious gems. He'd owned saloons and sporting houses and other businesses. And he had also loaned money and grubstake trappers. Gold and precious gems had all been stolen in far-off places. Vic cheated the trappers out of everything they brought back. When they complained, he showed the authorities the papers the always uneducated trappers had signed. It was all legal. The last time Preacher had traveled to St. Louis, Bedell had mistaken him for being unable to read or write and tried to get him to sign with his fur company. Preacher carefully read the wordy document, then wadded it up and tossed it aside, and told Bedell to go, well, commit an impossible act upon his very own person. Bedell got hostile, Preacher whipped him up one side of a street and down the other side, thoroughly humiliating the fancy pants, liar, cheat, whoremaster, and all-around scoundrel. Bedell swore he'd someday kill Preacher. Preacher laughed at him and headed back west. The very next year, so Preacher had heard, the law caught up with Bedell and he barely escaped the hangman's noose, fleeing St. Louis with his gang. He'd shown up in New Orleans. Preacher had thought he was still down there with his whores and dirty deals. But now here he was, big and bold as brass. Preacher watched the gang of cutthroats ride on until they were out of sight.
Well now, that wagon train is surely in trouble. That's gotta be the reason for Bedell following and laying back. Now, what do I do about it?
He decided that until Bedell and his men got long out of sight, the best thing he could do was just take a nap. So he did. Preacher napped for about 30 minutes, then broke camp and saddled up. He was uncertain as what he should do. Steele's pony had only said that it was a large band of men, but 50? And why did Bedell want the wagon train? There had to be more to this than met the eye, but what? What other reason would bring Bedell all the way from New Orleans clear up to the wilderness? Well, for a fact, the wagons were all new, and the man from Washington had said they were special made just for the trip. But Preacher, a suspicious man by nature, had gone over the wagons personally, looking for secret hiding places where gold might have been hidden. There were no special built hiding places. They were good, strong, sturdy wagons, and that's all they were. The army had scouted out some of the wilderness and reported back that there was no gold to be found west of the Mississippi. Now, Preacher knew that was a crock of crap. Not being a money-hungry man, Preacher had no special interest in the precious yellow metal. But Victor Bedell, now he was a money-hungry man. Preacher plunked down on the ground to think a spell. Maybe Bedell wasn't after the wagons, but had some information about gold and was going after it. The mules, oxen, and the wagons filled with supplies would just be the cherry on top of the cake, not to mention the women. Use up the women, trade them off to the Injuns as a token of friendship, and with the additional supplies, Bedell and his men would be set for months.
I think you may have it, old son.
After nightfall, Preacher engined the remaining 2 miles to Bedell's camp. The first thing he learned was that the men with Bedell were not a bunch of greenhorns. They had a carefully staggered circle of guards out, and they knew their business. They were good, all right, but Preacher figured that he was some better. He managed to steal one of their horses and lead him into a shallow ravine and picket him quiet. Shortly after that, he returned to the camp. The second shift took over, and Preacher picked out his man. The man moved around too much, and he had a bad habit of turning his back to the darkness outside the circle.
Hey, buddy!
Huh? Preacher smacked the flat side of his war axe against the man's noggin and dragged him off to the ravine. He tied the unconscious man belly down across the bare back of the stolen horse and got the help going. He was betting Bedell and his men would think Injuns grabbed the fella and wouldn't follow in the darkness. Preacher rode for over an hour, choosing his route carefully. He followed creeks, staying in the water much of the time to throw off and slow down any of Bedell's men who might follow him, but he didn't think any would. Finally, Preacher swung down and let the prisoner fall to the ground. The man had been awake for quite some time, but he'd had the good sense to keep his mouth shut. His belly down position on the bare back of the horse prevented him from seeing just who had grabbed him. Relief showed on his face when he realized the white man had taken him. But that relief was short-lived when Preacher pulled out his bone-handled, long-bladed bowie knife and touched the point of the blade to the man's cheek.
You ever see a man skinned alive?
No, sir.
You want to witness it firsthand?
Hell no!
You got a name?
Wolford Lewis.
You ever heard of a mountain man called Preacher?
Yes, sir.
What have you heard about him?
That he's mean, vicious, and a killer. That he's lived with savages for so long he's become one. There was a newspaper story on him back home. It said that Preacher has done gone and killed more than 1,000 men, red savages and white men. Then he fought grizzly bears and won. That he lives in a cave with a mountain lion. You know Preacher?
I'm Preacher. Oh. Wolford fainted. Victor Bedell, for the time and the place, was very elegantly dressed. Compared to those standing around him, why, he was a regular dandy. He watched the members of his gang as they broke down the camp. He turned to see Jack Hayes riding back from scouting the disappearance of Wolford Lewis.
I found shod horse tracks. That don't necessarily mean it was a white man. Injuns steal lots of horses.
Wolford was a fool. I won't risk lives by going after him. If this was the work of red savages, perhaps that's what they want us to do. And are waiting for us. The tracks head north. We'll continue on west. Personally, I think we're better off without Wolford. It was a mistake to bring him.
That was a relief even to his motley band of surly criminals. Wolford had been generally disliked. Back in Kentucky, Wolford had killed his mother and father in a dispute over money, and over the ensuing years had left a bloody trail of rape, murder, and mayhem. Not that the men riding with Bedell were any better. They weren't. They just liked to think they were. Wolford hadn't known much, but when he awakened from his faint, tied head down from a limb, looking at Preacher about to light a fire only inches from his hair, he was more than happy to share his limited knowledge with the legendary man. Wolford had been so scared he'd pissed in his long handles. Disgusted, Preacher had cut him down and thrown him into a creek to cut the smell, and then hauled him out and slapped the rest of the piss out of him. It only took about 5 minutes to reduce Wolford to a trembling, crying shell, huddled on the ground, begging for his life. Bedell had him a map, supposedly showing where a large deposit of gold was, and he and his gang were heading there. Once they had the gold, they were going to stake out, claim, and then rule a large portion of the Northwest. A king and his soldiers was the way Wolford put it. And Preacher had guessed right about the wagon train. When Bedell had learned about it, they had hastened their departure in order to fall in behind the train. Later on up the trail, they planned to attack the train, have their way with the women, then kill or trade them to the red savages and take the supplies. At first light, Preacher tossed the unlucky hooligan onto his horse and sent him on his way. On his return trip, Preacher stayed north of Bedell and his men and swung wide, hooking up with the ladies' wagon train just as they were making camp for the evening. Lieutenant Worthington, Eudora, Faith, and a few other women gathered around Preacher and his friends. There's 50 of them. I snatched one out of camp and read to him from the scriptures, and he was right glad to tell me everything he knew. Which wasn't much, by the way. Now there's 49 of them.
You killed that man?
No, I just slapped him around some and turned him loose.
You know this Bedell person, Captain?
I know him. He's a bad one. And that scum he's got with him is just as bad. And they ain't amateurs, neither. They're mean and low down, but they're all game to the end.
Ain't Bedell the one you whooped in St. Louis, Preacher?
Yeah, one of the same, Blackjack. He's a cheat, a murderer, a liar, and a whore master. I'm begging your lady's pardon, but he is. And anything else mean and low down you can think of, too. Army run him out of St. Louis, had a noose waiting for him that did. The man'll do just about anything. He's as poison mean as a copperhead.
You have a plan, Captain?
No, I surely don't. But starting tomorrow, we'll have some more outriders roaming a couple of miles from the train, in all directions. And y'all ain't gonna be seeing much of me, because I'm gonna be dogging Bedell and his men. Preacher cut his eyes to Blackjack, and the huge mountain man smiled. Blackjack knew that dogging Bedell's gang wasn't all that Preacher would be doing. He'd be headhunting, too. Later that night, Preacher and Worthington sat apart from the crowd at a small fire.
I think I shall disobey orders and have my men unpack and wear their uniforms from this point on.
Oh?
Yes. I have discussed it with my sergeant, and I believe that merely the sight of the United States Army would deter Mr. Bedell from any acts of violence against the wagon train.
Your heart's in the right place, Rupert, but you boys stay in civilian clothing. That's my thinking on it. Them pretty uniforms make dandy targets.
I see what you mean, Preacher. Not a good plan.
The young officer was silent for a moment, sipping his coffee. When he spoke, his eyes were soft as he stared into the fire.
Preacher,
What's it like further on?
Well, it's the most inspiring thing you'll ever see. It'll grab you, son. When you get in the middle of what we call the Rockies, it'll fling something fierce all over you. And if you're lucky, it'll never turn you loose. I ain't got the words to describe it, really. It'd take a man with a poet's heart to put it in words. You feel like you're so close to God, you can just reach right out and touch his face.
That is lovely, preacher.
Neither man had heard Faith walk up. Rupert immediately sprang to his feet and whipped off his hat. Preacher sat where he was and nodded his greeting. But he did snag another coffee cup and fill it up and wave the woman to a ground sheet.
If you'll excuse me, I'm sure there's something else I should be doing right now. Good night.
Preacher watched the young man make his escape before looking sideways at Faith.
So, we're on civil speaking terms again, huh?
Apparently so. I have to admit, things out here aren't like I thought they would be. Still, that doesn't mean I'm going to roll over just because you or anyone else tells me to.
Fair enough. Truthfully, that kind of outlook might help you survive better than most. You got a sharp tongue there, Missy, but if you can get through this in one piece, this wild land will turn you into a tempered blade.
You have the soul of a poet, preacher.
Yeah, well, don't let it get around. Something like that would ruin my reputation.
You're leaving in the morning?
Long before dawning.
Aren't you ever afraid, preacher? I mean, out here?
Hell yes. Man who says he ain't never been afraid is either a fool or a liar. You just got to overcome it and live with it and go on about your business.
You think we're really in trouble, don't you? You believe that this Bedell person and his thugs will actually attempt to harm us?
I don't believe it. I know it. I can't tell you where or when Bedell will strike, but strike he will. Y'all got to be extra careful. I got to convince you of that. He'll come on like a real gentleman. He can do that. I expect that what him and his men has planned is to get all mixed up with the members of the train and then strike like lightning when your guard is down. Well, now, you best get on back to your wagon, Missy. People gonna talk.
You care about things like that, preacher?
Not one whit.
Neither do I.
Faith rose gracefully to her feet, and their eyes met and held for a moment. She smiled at Preacher and then walked away into the gloom of the pale canvas-ringed circle. Preacher lay back on his blankets, his head on his saddle, and looked up at the diamond-pocked heavens far above him.
Oh, that woman is going to get me into trouble. I can hear y'all in them bushes. Now shut up.
Charlie Burke stepped out of the shadows and went swishing across the clearing like a fop, both hands on his hips. Soon, Blackjack and the others joined Ring took Steele's pony's hand, and the two waltzed around like they was at some sort of to-do. Preacher just lay on his blankets and let them have their fun, but he had to stick his fist in his mouth to keep from laughing when he spotted Eudora, Faith, and about 20 other ladies all hunkered down on the ground, peering intently through the wheel spokes at that stupid dancing and the other strange antics of the mountain men. Yeah, he figured Blackjack and the others would have some tall explaining to do come morning.